down for you.
Juan Castillo is a prisoner in Texas. If the state has its way, he'll be dead within the hour. This is Execution Watch. Huntsville, Texas, death penalty capital of the Western world, where prison staff is preparing to put Castillo to death by injecting a deliberate drug overdose into his veins. During the next hour, KPFT's Execution Watch will broadcast live coverage of the killing in Texas, the state responsible for more than a third of all U.S. executions. Execution Watch host Ray Hill, with criminal defense attorneys Larry Douglas, Mike Gillespie, Jack Lee, and Paige Yannick. Huntsville report outside the death house, Linda Huhan. Tonight's show will include Castillo's 20-minute interview with Execution Watch, taped recently at his request on death row. The Execution Watch for Juan Castillo begins.
Good evening, this is Ray Hill. You're listening to radio station KPFT Houston. It is Execution Watch's turn to cover the execution of Juan Castillo, who is in Huntsville. We have a reporter, and the producer is going to connect her up right now. I want to remind those of you tuned in ready for Arab voices that we're preempting their show tonight because we do that on this serious occasion of an execution. But Arab Voices will be back next week at its regular time and continue. Linda? Linda?
The witnesses are crossing the line now.
Well, we got an early start this time.
Is that start time?
Yeah, it's start time. Go ahead, Linda. Speak a little louder so that we can get you better here.
Okay, the witnesses are crossing the line at this moment.
Well, you actually talked to Juan earlier in the day and his family. Is that true?
Yes, that's true. I was with him Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday.
Well, we appreciate your vigilance in doing that. What kind of crowd do we have outside of the walls?
Well, actually, there's only like 10 of us. They have Gloria couldn't make it tonight.
Okay, so there's only 10 demonstrators opposed to execution before
yes.
the walls where the execution takes place. Linda,
yes.
How often are you up there?
I come every execution.
Occasionally, go inside your witness.
Yes, in fact, next month I will be a witness for Danny Bible.
Okay. So while this is going on, be sure and train young Joseph.
I sure will.
Okay?
I sure will.
Okay, we love you, and thank you very much for letting us know. I'll explain to the audience that when the witnesses cross the road, it means that Juan has been strapped into the gurney, and the tubes are in place into his veins, because the procedure will start promptly after everybody assembles in the execution chamber. And so then this procedure will continue until the witnesses are dismissed and they will come out across the road. Linda, you will let us know when that happens?
Yes, I will.
I appreciate it. And tonight, Robert Hurst of TDCJ will read a brief statement about the execution before the end of tonight's program.
Thank you, Ray.
Thank you. That's the beginning. And, Janik, what happened in this case?
Well, excuse me. Well, in this case, Mr. Castillo, in early December of 2003, had a rendezvous with a girl who was his girlfriend at the time and who had been the former girlfriend of the decedent. And He and...
By deceiving, you mean victim of the crime.
The victim of the crime, yes. Okay. Mr. Castillo and the girlfriend, is it Miss Esperanza?
Yes.
Yes. Mr. Castillo and Miss Esperanza...
I think it's Espinosa.
Espinosa, excuse me. I wanted her to be Esperanza. Oh, well. In any event, Miss Espinosa met with the decedent and went out on a date with him to a San Antonio lover's lane. This was an infamous area where a bunch of people had gone before. And at that San Antonio lover's lane, Mr. Castillo and a co-defendant set up a meeting with Miss Espinosa's former boyfriend, who is the decedent.
They set up a meeting?
The evidence shows that they lied in wait. And
okay. So they were prepared for them to get there.
They were prepared for
them
to get there.
They were dependent upon Miss Espinosa to get them there.
Indeed.
And so though she may have been a passenger car, she had some decision of where they parked.
She did have some decision-making capability in this encounter. In any event, the two gentlemen, Mr. Castillo and Mr. Gonzalez, set upon the decedent, and it appears from the evidence shown in court that Mr. Castillo chased after the decedent, firing a gun rapidly at him multiple times. The decedent fell to the ground and died. And Mr. Castillo was accused of both murder and then subsequently capital murder. His co-defendants, Miss...
And what would have made this capital murder is a robbery during which?
There was evidence showing that they were attempting to commit aggravated robbery, that was the plan, and that murder resulted during the attempt to commit the aggravated robbery, and it was aggravated because there was a weapon involved.
Well, if nobody got killed, it would have been a robbery, and if it wouldn't have been a robbery, it would just have been a regular killing and not a capital case.
Correct.
Okay.
In any event, the two co-defendants, Mr. Castillo's two co-defendants, pled for lesser included offenses.
Wait a minute. When were these people identified and arrested?
Well, Mr. Castillo was identified last in the scenario. Miss Espinosa was identified second. And the first person who was identified was Mr. Gonzalez. Mr. Gonzalez was captured at the scene.
Oh, okay.
Fairly readily after, okay, the incident occurred. And Miss Espinosa was taken into custody 2 or 3 days later. It was a longer period of time before Mr. Castillo was taken into custody.
Were they looking for him, or...?
Yes, they were, because Mr. Gonzalez was going ahead and providing evidence and statements to the police from his
co-defendant, right,
from his very capture.
So the person that was killed took off.
Yes.
And he was pursued by Juan Castillo.
By Mr. Castillo, yes.
According to the stories that we have. And so when Juan could have, kept on going. Now, wasn't
there was
something about jewelry?
Yes. The decedent was wearing a necklace. He was a rap star in San Antonio. And he was wearing a very, very large gold necklace on a heavy gold chain prior to his death. And this necklace was seen on Mr. Castillo the night of the murder. Later that day. And it was remarked upon by other people. And because it was such a unique piece of jewelry, it was known to have been, to have belonged to the decedents, and the fact that Mr. Castillo was wearing it was further evidence in the trial and of the issue of whether or not he was involved in the murder.
What happened to the weapon?
The weapon involved was never recovered. Later in the trial, evidence was obtained from, I believe, Mr. Castillo, that he said it was thrown off in a vacant lot in his flight. Or it was suggested that it was cast off during his flight from the scene of the crime.
Okay.
But the weapon itself was never recovered.
I went to Livingston, Texas, Mark Bertle, our videographer and one of the great technicians that work on the show. And I go to If We're Asked by inmates on death row. We go up there and interview them in advance. And what will follow here is about a 22-minute interview with Juan Castillo that was recorded about 2 weeks ago. Mark, is that right? About 2 weeks ago. And we drove all day, had a nice lunch, and went out to the Polunsky unit and met Robert Hurt, who's will be on later. And we went in and visited Juan. It was, well, you'll hear it. Juan has had several execution dates, and at early in the interview I remarked that he's the only person that I've ever met that got a delay of execution because of bad weather. They delayed his execution because it was not appropriate to transport him on the incident of Harvey. You ready for the interview, Bob? Please. Juan, tell us about who you were before all this mess happened.
I was just running the streets, you know. I wasn't really thinking too far ahead. I was going day by day because I was always in and out of jail. So the times I spent free since I was 17 were few and far between, you know. I spent more time locked up than I did in the free since then, you know. And it's like I'll get sentenced to the free road, like, you know, 3-4 months in the free and then come get locked up for a while, a couple years, whatever, and then back out for a couple months and then back in again. And
that was normal for you?
Yeah, it was pretty much since I was 17. And
where did this happen? What city?
San Antonio.
San Antonio.
Yeah.
Bexar County.
Bexar County. And I don't know, it's just, you know. I should have been different because, you know, I had a wife and kids, and I was just I lived every day by just what's going to happen that day. Right? I didn't think ahead. That's how it was. Yeah, pretty much. But everybody's living like that, you know what I'm saying? It's just a daily thing. It's just
normal.
Yeah.
So you were in and out of jail a lot, had a lot of friends there. Didn't make any difference which side of the bars you were on. You had friends?
Actually, you've got a lot of my friends I met. Well, I was locked up, and get out, and that's where I met them from, right? That's the most, right? Except for two of them, right? I've known them for since I was younger. But then, my closest friend was a guy named Robert. And, you know, me and him met in the county school. Everybody in the county school at that time was either on TYC parole or felony probation. So, you know, the whole school's like that.
Yeah.
You know, the whole school. And the school we went to it was an old Sears warehouse. And they had no cafeteria in the school. It was a warehouse. So they had, and when you go to school that morning, you know, they take your shoes, socks off, you know, do the metal detector, pat you down, and you have a dress code.
Like
put
when
you
I came in here.
Yeah, like that. So, and they put you in each class, you have a teacher and a security, every class, you know what I'm saying? And then all security are military guys, right? And that's where we met. And, you know, So it basically every minute is we've all been locked up, you know, say somewhere doing something, right? And you know, that's how it was, man. It's just that's how his life was, and where we were at. You know, I think back now, like, damn, you know, what the hell? You know, it's just, I trip out. Sometimes I think, like, you know, certain things, I'm like, what the hell was I thinking at the time, you know? Because, you know, you think back now, and you just wish now that your kids never get like that. And, you know, hopefully the mold and the cycle breaks here. You know, I've been locked up now going on 15 years, so, you know, it's just, you think you have a whole different mentality.
You've been locked up 15 years on this case.
Yeah, I've been locked up since 03. Yeah. And, you know, you mature, you grow, you know. And like, my mentality now is nothing like how it used to be when I was free, right? It's just, you know, I'm talking about like not just the one perspective, like all the way around. And, you know, I wish I would have a chance to be free with the mentality I have now, you know, than what I had before. But, you know.
Oh, tell me about your family.
I don't really got a big family. I got you know, my mom, dad. I got my wife. Well, you know, we're not together no more. We're still married, but we're not together. We're cool, I guess, still. I got two kids, and I got three sons and a possible daughter. You know,
and how old are they now?
The oldest is 21, then 19, and then 16, and then possibly 15.
Are they following Papa in the wild trail, or are they?
My middle son, Juan, I think maybe he's missing a little bit. I hope not, but, you know, I really had no contact with him, right? Well, the only son I have more contact with is my son Julian, and, you know, he's doing pretty good compared to what I was, right? But, he's missing a little bit in school, but I tried to get him to go right. He said he's going to do right, too, next year, because he already messed up the semester this year. So next year, he said he's going to do better. He's going to graduate high school, he said. He's going to get on the ball, and he's going to make up for the credits he messed up this year. So, you know, that's good, you know.
But you're not much able to manage that from in here.
Yeah, but, you know, the only thing is tell him is that, you know, we can't force him to do nothing, especially from here. You just tell him, and hopefully he'll take to heart what you're saying, you know, and do what's right.
They stay with your wife or your mother?
Well, they stay the oldest, Julian and Jacob, they're with my wife. And my other son, he's with his mom, or I think, I'm not too sure. And the other one, I believe she might be with, I don't know who she might be with. Her mother was murdered back in 08. So I have no idea. And that's why I say I don't even know if she's my daughter or not. But yeah, it's messed up, right?
Well, you're the only person I've ever talked to that actually got a stay of execution because of bad weather.
Already. I'm hoping another one comes out too.
So you'll take another Harvey, huh?
Nah, I don't want another Harvey. You know, that's affects too many people. I take a sinkhole underneath the death chamber.
Okay.
You know what I'm saying? Nice, massive sinkhole underneath the death chamber. Right? Follow that up, right? That way everybody else can get fall back, right? And they'll probably pull out a mobile gurney or something.
Yeah, because we were all ready to do the show, and then it got canceled because of bad weather. And
yeah.
I said, ain't this something? Yeah. Congratulations.
Oh, yeah.
Stormings were timed on your... You got somebody out looking for you.
Yeah. Okay, man. So, this is my fourth date now.
Fourth date?
I went through three of them last year. I spent 9 months on death watch.
Yeah.
And now this one, too.
Could you characterize what's different about death watch and regular death watch?
You got a camera in the cell?
Hmm?
You got a camera in your cell? And you only wreck in one day room?
That's it.
It's the same.
Yeah. And you don't even know whether anybody's watching or not.
Well, they're watching because, you know, if you cover it up, hey, uncover your camera, so they're watching. They have access to the cameras through a bunch of different channels over here. And you got in the picket, you got the monitors where they watch you in the picket too. But, you know, the camera ain't nothing, you know, it's just, I put up a curtain, you know, every now and then. And other than that, I don't mess with it, right? I just forget about it. So, but it's nothing. You know, I don't really care what cell I'm in over here, death watch or not. You know, the only thing it is the date, and get the date off, and I don't care, right? So they could leave me on death watch the whole time. I wouldn't care.
Who's representing you at this point?
Texas Tennessee Network and Texas Defender Service.
Okay.
And
some pretty good lawyers over there.
Yeah. So I got two issues pending right now for Texas Defender Service has those. Texas Instant Network. I'm not too sure right now what they have planned, but I got those two right now. One's in CCA, one's Supreme Court.
Studying your case, and I do that before I come down here, I understand that there's an issue about a witness in your case that lied under oath.
Yes. It was called, I was already like 3 or 4 days into trial. He came forward and said that I told him that I committed the crime while we were incarcerated together, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So we're talking about the jailhouse snitch that you had no previous connection to.
Well, no, check it out. So this is how it went. Like in the county jail, I was in high bond. I had a couple cases. Everybody there had either capital murder cases or escape charges. Mm-hmm. Well, he was there for escape. Okay, so
yeah, he had something to sell. So
So we're on a tier system in there. You know, in the first shift, one row will come out. Second shift, two row will come out, and the next day you'll switch up. One row will come out second, and then two row will come out first. So we're never in the same rec group, never. So I don't know where I'm supposed to confess this to him, right? Because we're never in the same rec group, right? So, you know, in the county jail, when I was in that pod for about maybe a month, and then I came back from federal court because I had a federal case pending when I got locked up on this case. So I came from back to court, and the officer said, "Hey, man, pack your stuff, get moved." I said, "For what?" He said, "You got a co-defendant in the pod." Like, "No, I don't." He said, "Well, you got moved here while you're at court." And I was like, "All right, cool." So I got moved. I went to Ag-Seg for a little bit. I went some months there. And then the so-called co-defendant, when he was in high bond, something happened. He got moved to a Mexican mafia pod. So then they put me back in high bond. They took me out of Seg, put me back in high bond. And I put me in the same cell he was in, right? So everybody told me, "Hey, yeah, this was one of his homeboys and stuff like that, right?" Which was that guy, right? And he would come talk to me sometimes through the door, right? He'd try to come talk to me, and he'd send me little kites and everything, you know, asking for newspapers and food and sure. All this stuff, right? So, you know, I'd every now and then, right? But he was my homeboy, so I wasn't giving it to him free. You know, so I'd say, "You make calls, so you pay me back," right? Like, all right, right? So one day, you know, in county jail too in San Antonio, like your visitation days depend on your last name.
Mm-hmm.
So his last name is Gutierrez and Castillo, so we had the same visitation days, right? So one day they told me, "Hey, Castillo, you got a visit." Like, all right. So they let me out of my cell and go to the picket. Because they had to wait for an escort to escort you to sure. there. So he comes down too. I told you got a visit? He's like, "Yeah." I'm like, "All right." So the officer comes, escorts us to visit. And I see he's in front of me as we go. He's in front of me. So I see the visitor come in, his visitor, and I recognize her. And she's the niece of my so-called co-defendant. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So I look at her like, "Oh, you know, that don't, you know." So when we come back, I know who she is. I recognize her, you know what I'm saying? So when we come back, I tell him, "Who comes to see you?" He's like, "Off my chin." All right. So I didn't say nothing about it. I was like, "All right, cool." So, you know, after that, all that goes back, I go to trial. Next thing you know, the fool comes out of trial. Said I told him I committed a crime. I told my attorney, "Hold on, man. This fool right here is connected to him." But my attorney would never show him. I told my man, "Look, go get the visitations from the county jail. It'll show that he's connected to this guy." Well,
who represented you in that crime?
Vincent Callahan. Horrible attorney.
Okay.
You know what I'm saying? So he didn't want to do it. He didn't want to do his job.
And we're going to explore that trial.
Yeah.
From its transcript. Did you get any recognition of that issue on appeal?
No, it would never. Okay, he didn't recant until after I was in the federal. Well, I was in federal court already. So my federal attorney, I was told that he didn't go through proper channels. Well, he went and got the fool. He recanted, right? And instead of telling the federal court, you know, can you hold up and let it go back and exhaust this issue in the state? He just files into the federal and they deny it. Procedure barred, didn't go to the proper channel, right? So I had to wait to get kicked out of the federal, get kicked out of the officer, get kicked out of the Supreme Court, and to get back in the state. And that's when we filed it, and I got to stay on it.
Okay, but, so you did get a stay on that issue.
Yes, that was a
previously.
Yes.
So that issue has been considered, and it resulted in a stay.
Yes, but then this is another thing, man. This is the crazy part, is because, let me go back to the trial part, right? Okay, so when he's in trial, they ask him, "Well, why'd you come forward?" He says, "Oh, I've taken so much from society and I want to give back." Like, "All right, you know, do we work a deal with you?" He's like, "No, I came by myself, this and that." You know, when he shows that he didn't come just because he didn't. He's connected with this dude, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
That's on my case. And, well, Mr. took it so much from society and wanted to give back. You know where he's at right now? He has a life sentence population for killing a woman and burning her, sitting there on fire and everything. And that happened in October 06. That was 14 months after my trial.
So his pattern of behavior did not benefit from the deals he was able to cut.
Well, I don't know what deals he's had. So, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I don't know all that. But I'm saying, even if he didn't have a deal, there was a purpose for him to come, and it was to help out that dude. You know what I'm saying? Because it was, there was no, okay, like I'm telling my attorneys, man.
No, I know from Bexar County Jail. Actually, I wrote a policy for Bexar County Jail. Uh-huh. What to do with people with Tourette's syndrome.
Okay.
And so somebody comes in and they call them cops, all them mother things and all of that. They have a policy how not to injure that person's right because they have a mental thing.
I don't think that works too much.
That's what I do with my spare time is write jail policies.
Yeah. So it's crazy with that, right? But okay. So yeah. So when we okay, in 2015, I'm reading the San Antonio newspaper.
Yeah.
And I see a trial going on in the 186th District Courtroom, which is my courtroom.
Mm-hmm.
And it says the judge, presiding judge, Jefferson Moore.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Well, Jefferson Moore, I recognize that name because I had a prior attorney named Jefferson Moore.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Well, this guy, you know, he was called. He gets found guilty at the end, and a couple days later, he gets found guilty and stuff, right? And they show a picture of Jefferson Moore sentencing him. I'm like, man, that used to be my lawyer.
Yeah.
So I told my attorneys about that, right? And they're like, okay, we'll see if that's a conflict of interest, right? Well, nothing went about it with that. And then,
If he had been a lawyer in any part of your case, he can't sit as judge.
Yeah. Well, he was on a prior case.
I know. Yeah. But. I think the way it's supposed to work.
But there's the thing though. Now he recused himself though when I got to stay. For the simple fact is he used to represent Gutierrez too on a prior case. So he recused himself. Well, my case got reassigned to another judge that was supposed to hear that issue, and that judge is Maria Teresa Herr, which is my original trial judge. I told my attorney right off the bat, I was like, man, that's not good. She's not going to do nothing in my favor. And sure enough, as soon as she got the case. Next day, she denies it. She didn't give me no due process in it. She didn't.
But you got that on record, so you can appeal that issue.
Well, they're appealing it right now, but.
I know it's getting close. The clock's ticking off. Notice how loud the clock ticks sometimes.
Man, you know, last year, the 9 months, man, I was like, I did that time like I was a 10-year-old, knowing I was gonna live to be 100. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
It was like,
dude, yeah,
you know.
Don't you think we all go through that?
Yeah, but you know, I
didn't go to prison for nothing. You got to work your way in prison.
Yeah.
Especially if you get a 160-year sentence.
Yeah, but you know, I was, you know, even right now, you know, I'm not tripping, right? But at the same time, like, man, I see this year, no courts has gotten no action. Nobody's gotten action. Everybody, they're 6-0 right now, the courts. Thomas Whitaker, he got a clemency, but the courts
but if it wasn't for his daddy, he wouldn't have got nothing.
Yes, exactly. But if he wouldn't have got a clemency, they would have killed him. So right now, they're basically 6-0. And I don't know. I guess election year or something, right? Something going on. They ain't trying to hear nothing right now. And so I don't know. I don't know what's up with the case, right? That's what's going on. But, yeah. I don't know. It's crazy right now, so.
What do you want people to remember about Juan Castillo?
Really? Whatever they want to remember by. The ones people that know me, they'll remember by whatever they want to remember by. The people that don't know me, it don't really matter how they remember me.
Most of the people watching this film are in Europe and Asia.
Yeah.
In the Middle East and in Australia.
Yeah.
And so they don't know Juan.
I know. So that, you know, saying I couldn't know what to tell. I can't just really describe me. You have to get to know me, you know. And that's, I don't know.
This is we're at the point where this is getting serious.
Yeah.
Can you handle it?
Hell yeah, okay.
You can handle anything.
Dude, I'm like this, right? If God won't, I really believe that God won't give me more than I can handle. You know what I'm saying? So if He fits me right here, then He said He figured I'm fit to take care of it, right? I don't do no stressing. I don't get depressed. You know, I'm able to laugh all the time. I never lose my sense of humor.
But you know what mothers and wives tell me about my show? They thank me for their laughter. Because when mothers and wives are visiting, there's not a laughter going on. But Uncle Ray can come up here and relax and let it down. And
I'm the same at all times, right? I don't change up. I try to be the same at all times. I don't want to be in a down state, you know. I don't want to be like that.
Well, Linda certainly thinks highly of you, and she's on my staff.
Oh yeah, that's good, man. As a matter of fact, I'll be seeing her Monday.
Give her my love, even though I'll be out there and can give her my love almost any time on the internet.
Yeah, I think I'll see her on the 14th. And so, yeah, I don't know. That's about it. And
Juan, how do you get along with the other guys on the row?
Well, actually, I ain't got no enemies over here. I guess, you know, some people, you know, I don't really care too much about, right? But, you know, I let them do them and I do me. I don't really let none of what they do affect me. And I don't try to do anything that'll affect them, you know?
Yeah, they tell me if you got to live on the row, you kind of become a convict, and
yep.
That's the way that works.
I do me, right? Stay in my cell, whatever's in my cell, it's me, you know, nobody really can say nothing about it, you know, so. I don't really worry about what's going on in anybody else's cell. But yeah, just, you know, I got lots of friends back here, you know, people, acquaintances and stuff like that, but I ain't got no enemies, though. And I don't know, just pretty good back here. You know what the thing is if you're looking back here in different one, but you met at least 80% could be in population with no problem at all.
Of course not.
You know what I'm saying? They're not the worst of the worst.
No. We worked that out way back in Billy Hughes, and I don't think you've been down here long enough to remember Billy. But Billy and I worked with Wayne Scott, former director of prisons, but he was just the sergeant on death row then. Mm-hmm. Worked out the work release program where the guys could get out and sew.
Yeah. So, you know, it was crazy too. You know, before trial, I was offered a couple of plea bargains, right? But I refused to plead guilty. So, you know, they set the death penalty. But my thing is this, right? If the death penalty is supposed to be reserved for the worst of the worst, then, you know, a plea bargain should never have been sought in my thing. You know what I'm saying? Because if you're seeking a death on me, then, you know, no plea bargain shouldn't even be an option. But, you know, they offered me a plea bargain quite a few times. I mean, in fact, even during trial, I was offered a plea bargain. It was a horrible plea bargain, but it was a plea bargain, right? And so now I proceed with trial, right? I already knew the trial was looking bad, too. I told them to proceed with trial. And my thing is this, though. When they offered a plea bargain, that would have showed right there that I ain't the worst of the worst, and death penalty should never have been came back up. You know, that's what I think, you know? And, you know, one time, too, in San Antonio, at midnight, they'll call you. Hey, you need to put get an intercom. Hey, Castillo, you go to court. You going to shower and shave before you go? He's like, yeah. It's like, all right. So I was already picking jurors and stuff, right, during voir dire. And, you know, I wake up by myself, right, and I push the button. The officer, man, what time is it? And it was a little after 12. I was like, hey, man, you let me shower and shave before I go to court? He's like, nah, they ain't called for court, right? I'm like, well, I'm supposed to go to court. I'm picking jurors and stuff, right? He's like, well, when they call, let you shave and shower. I'm like, all right, cool. So I keep back for a little bit. And I'm waiting. About an hour go by. Press it again. He's like, man, they ain't called for you yet. Like, well, let me go shower and shave anyway. So you go, nah, I'll wait until they call you. Like, all right, cool. Well, breakfast time comes, which is about maybe 3:30, and still nothing, right? Well, long story short, first shift comes on, nothing still, right? So officer, man, let me go shave and shower before we go to court, right? And he's like, nah, right? So they didn't call for you. Well, finally, about, I don't know, 8 o'clock, I finally go. I get downstairs, and you know, I have to go change out with the free roll clothes, right? So I go to booking, right? Go to clothing. And he said, well, what's your name? What you going? I go, I'm going to court. I go, what's your name and number? So I give my name and number. He types up a computer. He goes, this is our CO1. Our CO1 means you're going home, right? I'm like, nah, I'm going to court. And he's like, well, either way, you got to change out. So I get my stuff, right? I change out. I go get in the holding cell. I'm waiting. I hear some officer, Castillo Juan. But it's like a ways down way, you know, down the ways, right? No, he says his name, Castillo Juan. Nobody's answering, right? He said, Castillo Juan. So, hey, I'm Juan Castillo. He's like, what are you doing over there? Get over here. So where he's at is these guys are all going home. They're lined up.
You got that close to the door.
Yeah, and so I'm in line. He's asking me, well, what's your name? And I know Juan Castillo, your number, 714-294. And, you know, what's your social security number and your address? And I tell him, man, look, I'm not going home. I'm going to court. He's not listening, right? He's still asking me. I was like, man, I'm not supposed to go home. I'm going to court, right? And I told him, look, man, I'm picking a jury for a capital murder case. And that's when he stopped. And he went to the lieutenant's desk, right? And I said, hey, man, go back over there to the court. So if you look at my transcript, it'll show when I got to voir dire, the judge said, I told the one of the jurors, hey man, you know, sorry for there was a mix-up at the jail. Because they're trying to release me. And I told him no, because I was going to go to court. You know what I'm saying? So if I'm telling you...
So you got that close to the door,
yeah.
And it was a ruse.
No, I stopped.
According to them, you're going home.
Yeah, because it was a mix-up in the paperwork, in the computer, right? So I'm like, man, you know, if they would have actually forced me to leave, I would have just walked to the courthouse. Thinking back now, I should just left, right? But at the same time, I had no reason to leave. You know what I'm saying? I really truly believed that even with the terrible lawyer, I really believed that I was gonna go to trial, and go home, or go actually go to the feds and then go home. But I don't know, man. Just look back now, you know.
Yeah.
Should have went. Right? But nah, you know I don't regret it though. No. Hey, you know.
Juan, we're running out of time. Anything you want to? We've talked about you. I love that story, by the way. I'll steal it and tell it sometime.
Yeah. I don't really know what to say too much, right? I didn't really know what to expect, right? I listen to some of the shows sometime, right? But I don't know. I don't really know too much to say, right? I guess I'm not really a talkative person.
No, you've been done very well in this interview. You carried most of it. I didn't want to do much, and I didn't. Listen, you've been easy for me to interview, and I appreciate your attitude and your courage.
Yeah. I don't know. I appreciate it, right? But, you stick to everything to what's on the
transcript and everything, right?
All right. Is that cool if I send you something? Is that cool if I send you something?
Sure.
Okay,
I'll take anything you send me and make sure it gets to the lawyers. They do the work.
Yeah.
I play Mother Hen, and they do the work.
I'll put it in the mail in the morning.
Okay.
Yeah. And that's it, right? But you know, coming here, I met people I didn't even think I would ever meet, right? And there were a lot of the time, they're the ones help you get through here, right? They help you, you know, with so much, you know what I'm saying? Just mail, just encouraging words, you know?
You got fans all over the world now.
Yeah, but I don't know.
I wish you had had these back during the days of the trial.
Man, I wish I had, like, some of my friends I got right now. I wish I would have known them when I was free, man.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like,
they're the folks you can have coffee with.
Huh?
They're folks you can have coffee with.
Man, this is the most of people, right? This is me.
Juan, thank you.
Yeah.
Oh, is that what it is?
Okay. Well, as you can tell, Juan and I got along very well. In the course of that interview, we had spent a few minutes before the interview bonding, and as the interview progressed, we got to be better and better friends. That's a horrible part about this job of doing execution watch, is that I remember when I used to do execution watch about names that appeared before me in paper, but now I've actually met these people and I've had a conversation with them, and that was tape recorded for you to see. By the way, the tape recording will be posted at Houston Media Source and on the website in a few days. It takes Mark a little while to take the videotape of this show and splice it in the videotape of the interview, but it will be there. I want to remind you, if you've been tuned in, listening, hoping to hear Arab voices, and there's a lot going on in that part of the world, Arab Voices is certainly an interesting program right now. They were preempted so that we could cover the execution of Juan Castillo. But they'll be back next week with their usual important and pertinent and sometimes very important information for you. So don't give up on Arab Voices, their wonderful crew. Paige, what happened in the trial in this case?
Well, briefly, in the trial, the state presented its evidence, and there were competing theories as to guilt and innocence in the trial itself. There was discussion with witnesses about whether or not it started out as an aggravated robbery. There is some suggestion that it was there was a jealousy issue going on between Mr. Castillo's present girlfriend and the decedent Mr. Garcia's former girlfriend, who is the same person. That was Miss Espinosa. Yes. In any event,
Do they actually have to resolve that conflict in order to make this a capital case?
No, they didn't. The issue, to make it a capital, was...
It had to be robbery.
It had to have been aggravated robbery, and a death had to result through the course of committing the aggravated
robbery. It was just jealous
robbery.
Boyfriends killing, that's not capital.
No, that would have been murder, probably.
It would have been murder, but not capital.
Yeah, just plain old, you know, garden variety murder. In any event, the guilt innocence part of the case was, it appears that our defendant was involved, actually involved with his lawyers in formulating the guilt innocence issue of the case. However, once the jury found him guilty of capital murder, the punishment phase was set to begin. And Mr. Castillo, either through anger or shock or some other emotion that I can't put my finger on, decided that he wanted to represent himself. Now, his two lawyers, which were experienced capital lawyers, were placed on standby sort of mode during the punishment hearing. They were there to assist him if he wanted assistance, or they could take it over if he decided to give up self-representation. But he specifically asked his judge to represent himself at punishment and to make his lawyers sit down and shut up. And they did. And the punishment session lasted 2 days. And in the course of punishment, he did not call any witnesses. He did not cross-examine any witnesses. There was no evidence as to, you know, diminish punishment, to make it a life sentence as opposed to a death sentence. And it was probably one of the shortest deliberations in the history of Bexar County. It took about 25 minutes for the jury to come back and say death. So that is what happened in the trial. We're going to have Larry address the accomplice witness problem in the trial. And Mike is going to refer to some of the policy issues surrounding the accomplice witness problem. And Jack is going to talk about the punishment hearing itself. So, Larry, would you like to begin?
Sure. Briefly, Ray, as Paige has already mentioned, back in December of 2003, Tommy Garcia Jr. was an up-and-coming rap star in San Antonio, about 19 years old. And he got set up for robbery. By four people, those people being Deborah Espinosa, Francisco Gonzalez, and Teresa Quintero, along with Juan Castillo. So Espinosa served his bait, got Tommy Garcia to a secluded area where he was to be robbed by Gonzalez, Francisco Gonzalez, and Juan Castillo. Castillo, according to the evidence, primarily coming from co-defendants, Castillo had a weapon, had a gun. Gonzalez had a gun, but his was supposed for show because it didn't work. So Castillo comes up to the car, knocks out a black back window, points a gun at Garcia, and says, "Give me your money." Well, that's what they thought was going to happen. You're going to get the money. But Garcia takes off running. And so Castillo pumps him, according to the witnesses. And so right at that point, Espinosa's picked up right away. Gonzalez picked up shortly after her. And then days later, after Gonzalez and Espinosa have given a lot of testimony saying, fingering Juan Castillo, then Juan Castillo now is charged with a capital murder. The primary witness, there was no forensic evidence tying him to the murder. They didn't find the weapon. There was no DNA discovered of him, nothing linking him other than the testimony of the accomplices, called accomplice witnesses. Now, when you have accomplice witness testimony, there has to be some corroboration. That is, if you take out all the accomplice witness testimony, is there enough evidence to find the person guilty beyond a reasonable doubt? But the evidence, the non-accomplice witness testimony does not have to be beyond a reasonable doubt. It just has to be something that tends to tie the accused to the offense. And so there were several things that tended to tie him. the presence of the necklace that he had, the Garcia's necklace. Someone said they saw it on him, and then it says they told him, hey, look, you know, that necklace looks familiar, so he took it off. And so other witnesses said, we saw him with the necklace of the dead guy. And there were other witnesses that said, yeah, I heard him say something about, you know, they're not going to do anything to me because they can't find the weapon because I ran away and I hid it. Both the weapon and the bulletproof vest, the vest, there are witnesses other than the accomplices who said that he, had admitted to them. Okay. And the circumstances behind the meeting together, there were witnesses says, yeah, we knew that they were going to go, that Espinosa, was going to go and meet with Garcia. And then shortly thereafter, Espinosa called and says, somebody killed Garcia. Okay. So there were other things and the corroboration does not necessarily have to be corroboration.
Yeah. I've got a dumb question to ask about that because I recall from my early youth that the Rosenberg case, the Rosenbergs could not have been executed under state law because it was all testimony of co-conspirators, and you needed more evidence to do an execution of Julius and Ethel Rosenberg's famous case.
Okay.
That they would not have been executed under state law, but they could be executed under federal law because the burden of additional evidence besides co-involved conspirators was insufficient. What am I missing?
You're not missing anything, right? But there were differing standards between the state and the federal law in terms of the kind of corroboration that is needed to substantiate a conviction, particularly capital murder.
And all they had in the Rosenberg case was a half of a Jell-O box cap.
Okay. But the level of corroboration is very low even now. Mike has some problems with that. But the level of corroboration just has to be something that, not beyond a reasonable doubt, you know, not even clear and convincing, but just something that tends to connect the defendant, the accused, to the offense. That's all that's required. And in this case, it was there.
Mm-hmm. Ray, Elizabeth has something to say.
Yeah, Ray, I just heard from a reporter at Huntsville, Linda Huhan, and she
as
said
Larry stated,
the witnesses
this
have
is
just come out.
The witnesses have come out and across the road. I interrupt everything to make that announcement.
Thank you.
Juan Castillo at this time is dead. His body will be removed from the death chamber by the Carnes Funeral Services, and he'll be taken to a small church not far so his families can touch the body while it still has warmth. I know that's morbid, but I have to make this announcement every time they execute somebody. It will go on record as a homicide. It was a homicide. Juan Castillo died as a result of a homicide by the state of Texas against him. I'm sorry.
Now, Mike.
I agree with everything Larry said. The law is real clear that a co-defendant cannot testify against you unless there's some proof to show he's telling the truth. I think that's good law when it comes to robbery, when it comes to theft, when it comes to drug dealing. The trouble is this is capital murder. I think capital murder needs a higher standard. I think the decision on who to execute should be, if we're going to believe in execution, that's decision should come from the government and the courts. It should not come from co-defendants when four people agree to commit a robbery. And during that robbery, either was planned to kill this man or it was an impulse to kill this man, but all four were there together. The first two arrested, they got 40 years by fingering the third person as a shooter. The truth is, there's no evidence he's a shooter. We don't know to this day who the shooter was. The only evidence we have who the shooter is are the other two.
Except for the part that Castillo told a fellow inmate while he was in jail before trial that, oh, he, you know, I did this, but it's okay. They simply won't have.
Jack is one who has been to jail. The major can come in and say, all right, who wants to help me out on this case? And you get 25 volunteers that'll step up and say, what lie you want me to tell if I'm going to help you out this case?
It should not be decided by the co-defendants on who's going to be executed. It should be decided by the government. In my position, if you can't punish them all equally, one should not be singled out. And the one being singled out should not be singled out by his co-defendants. They all committed the crimes. The other thing that bothers me is I think the most guilty person is the girlfriend. Here is the girl who was the girlfriend of the person who was killed. She's the girlfriend of the guy we just killed today. She's the one who knew how much money she had. She was the one who lured him over there. She was the one who was going to have sex with him, and all of a sudden he's robbed. Why is she let loose from any punishment? And what about the second girl? There was another girl there that we don't even see was being charged. Why
she
a woman given
the second girl is supposed
that?
To be the getaway driver?
Yeah.
Yes, the getaway driver.
And well, she got away.
Indeed, it appears that she might have.
Why do we have a different standard between men and women? Why? They were all there. They all committed the crime. In my position, it might have been her idea. We don't know. Everybody wants to pin it on him, but it all came from the co-defendants. And my position is strictly the government should decide who should be executed, not the co-defendants.
Michael,
if they got 40 years, they also got 40 years.
Michael, I've said this before to you, and I'll say it again. The absence of evidence is not evidence.
The absence of evidence
is
not
evidence, but it does
take
evidence to kill somebody.
Well,
I mean, the Jell-O cap was not enough in the Rosenberg case.
I understand that.
Yeah, but there was a real Jell-O case. Box cap and Jell-O, they had it's in evidence box somewhere, but Ethel and Julius Rosenberg were killed under federal law where corroborating co-defendants testimony alone could result in an execution, but that could not happen in any state jurisdiction in the country at the time. So has the standard changed, or are we just well, I mean, he's the wrong color, and he promoted, because he admits in the interview that he was a Bear County on the streets punk kid. That's what he grew up as. He lays that out with no question in my mind that he was telling the truth. And is that just what we do with punk kids who grew up on the wrong side of the track in San Antonio or anywhere else?
That's right.
That's probably a good time to segue into punishment and why Castillo got the death penalty for this case. You know, you've seen folks who committed more not get put to death. You've seen folks who did more, who committed more murders and not get the death penalty, get life in prison instead. I think really what happened, if you look at the totality of the case, this execution was a self-inflicted execution. I think looking at the court documents, it seems fairly evident that Castillo was absolutely certain he was going to be exonerated, that they were going to find him not guilty. He told an inmate.
Yeah, the absence of gun is
right.
Insufficient evidence.
Oh, right.
No powder burns.
And he had a mask on. He had a bulletproof vest on that he ditched in a field that he admitted to his fellow inmate. I really think he was absolutely certain the jury was not going to come back and say guilty. Now, keep in mind, for the folks who don't know the Texas death penalty system, first you have guilt innocence, and once you have guilt innocence, then you have punishment. And in the punishment phase, at least in a death penalty case, you want to give mitigation evidence. You want to talk about the things that you want to bring up the issue of
and
future
none
Davis.
Of that happened.
None of it happened.
He ditched
yeah.
his lawyer.
None of it happened. And I think the reason why none of it happened was because Castillo was so absolutely convinced he was going to be exonerated or at least get a hung jury that when it came back guilty, he fired his lawyers.
But that was a fait accompli.
Yes.
Did yeah. he have trouble adjusting the fact that he had been convicted?
I think he was so angry.
At his lawyers.
At his lawyers, so in shock that he said, these lawyers are obviously not doing their job. I'm going to fire them. And then in the punishment phase, he sat on his hands.
Because maybe he knew the other one was the one who was the shooter. We still don't know who shot the gun.
Again, the absence of evidence is not evidence.
And the absence of evidence does not mean we execute a man. What that means is everybody is punished equally.
Yeah, because that cuts both ways,
Jack. I understand.
And maybe he was so mad because he was the only one that knew he didn't do it, that his lawyers couldn't prove that he didn't do it. The fact is we don't know who did it. All we know is the other guy said he did it.
I don't know how much you listened to the interview. But in the interview, he talks about one of his co-defendants sending surreptitiously somebody in to the jail to do something. You were listening to that, Larry. Did you get that part? And that he was adamant about that part. And I didn't know where that was going. Well, guess what? I hear background news. You know what that means?
Program's over.
Juan Castillo is dead, and so is the show. My name is Ray Hill, and I am... honored to work with these wonderful people around here who spend a lot of time thinking about this. I'm honored to work with our technical staff. Mark and I make those long trips to Livingston to do the interviews. But here's the deal. Juan Castillo is dead, and we don't know, really, other than your opinion of the videotape and the sound of his interview. Who's right? But we presented this, and I want to thank Elizabeth Stein, who is a wizard producer. She makes all this happen, and she tells me she is my boss at least three times a day. And I want to thank Larry Gugliss, Mike Gillespie, Jack Lee, and tonight's lead attorney on the case, Paige Yannick. They belt in that deeply for you. Linda Hugman is in Huntsville. Thank you for her. We did not actually get a spokesperson from TDCJ on the air for an interview, but the music you hear is Victoria Panetti. Her brother remains on death row, a mental patient awaiting to be killed by the state of Texas. Our next execution watch is coming up in a couple of weeks. And so stay tuned. As scheduled, you can visit us on executionwatch.org or our Facebook page. My name is Ray Hill, and thank you and good night.